in our program, where I have to remind you that we are listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you think that the message we have on Radio Liberty is important and you'd like to see this spread across America, why, we'd love to hear from you. Our address, Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Some people like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and if you do, why, you get the four best tapes of the month, or why, we send you a book every month or every other month, something that we have on hand that we think is important that will help you to better understand what is really transpiring in the world today. And then, of course, if you'd like to change your long-distance carrier, that's another thing you can do to help us. And all you have to do is just pick up your telephone and call 1-800-KICKWLE. That's K-I-K-W-L-E, or if you prefer, 1-800-545-9533. And a very nice lady who answers the telephone will change your long-distance carrier over from AT&T and MCI to Lifeline. And then our ministry gets 10% of whatever your bill is. And we think your bill will be lower. Certainly, our bills have been lower. We do an awful lot of telephone calls. We call people all over the country on a regular basis till we can bring you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And but my wife tells me that our bills really have been much less, and not only that, then we get 10% back. That comes to us. You don't get that. That comes, and it helps us to get other stations online. And as you know, we now have 15 stations across the country that carry a part of our programming. And we're having an opportunity to reach people who never before heard much of what we have to offer and the description of the spiritual battle that's being waged in America, indeed throughout the world, to determine whether this nation or any nation so conceived can long endure, because at one time we were a Christian nation, and of course there are powerful forces intent upon destroying the Christian foundations of our nation, of our belief, and certainly of our freedom. So if you believe in what we're doing and would like to help us, why, we'd love to hear from you. Remember once again that telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, or the address, Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. And we might want to mention, if you haven't seen our four-tape series on the Tuskegee study, it's a very important story, because How do you explain what happened in the Tuskegee story? You have to understand the mindset of those people within government who carried on this bizarre, macabre American version of the Holocaust. It's available by simply calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, the Tuskegee study. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. My guest this evening, Mr. Carl Lawrence, and he travels throughout the world. He certainly has written extensively. In fact, I'm hoping maybe we can talk to him sometime about the story of Rwanda, because I think this is such a vitally important story. Our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to call in, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question or comment for Mr. Lawrence, why, we can certainly do that. How can people get copies of your book? Because I think it certainly will tend to strengthen the faith of anybody who reads this book. It's really a very emotional book. I'll have to admit I had a difficult time of reading it because of the emotion that was there. I mean, I enjoyed it. If you can enjoy something that really pulls at your heartstrings. How can people get copies of that?
Any Christian bookstore, if they just go in and ask for China, The Coming Influence by Carl Lawrence, it's published, it's actually Quaestar, but it's published under Vision House. So if you go into a Christian bookstore and ask to look up under my name or under the title China, The Coming Influence, they will get a copy.
All right, fine. You'll find it fascinating, fascinating reading. And it also tend to strengthen your own personal faith to see the courage of these people. Sometimes we think we have it bad here in the United States, but we have no concept at all of what real faith is until you see the sacrifice made by the Chinese. Now, one of the things you point out is that at the time when China went communist, the church in China really was sort of a tepid church. I don't know how many Christians there were at that
900,
time.
900,000.
900,000. But it was not a strong and vibrant church. And the missionaries had been working there very hard for a long period of time. And so suddenly this terrible persecution comes across the land. But as a result of that, first of all, people began turning to Christianity. And then Mao did a number of things. Why don't you talk about the roads, the uniting of the nation, the language, all of these things, that the literacy, all of these things that made it possible for Christianity to thrive in the nation.
Right. Well, see, we wouldn't think of Mao as the man who would purify the church, which was a dying church, really. But Mao decided that he was to be the Messiah of China, and that no one else was supposed to be anything that even come close to being what he was to be, and that is the new emperor. But more than that, he was to be God. But he had some problems. He wrote a little red book called The Thoughts of Mao Zedong, which is really just plagiarized Proverbs. And he said, I want everybody in China to get one of these books. And the people said, well, wait a minute, it takes us forever to get anywhere. I had a missionary friend that took weeks to get back. Well, actually, it took 7 months to get it back into a couple of the missionary stations back into China. In the central part, and much of that was on the back of a mule. And no good party person is going to haul Mao's books on a mule for that amount of time. And so Mao said, we don't have any employment in socialism, but we got about 300-400 million people standing around with nothing to do. So, in 2 years, they had from 75,000 kilometers to 189,000 kilometers of roads. And, I was in China about 5-6 years ago on one of the trips and went back to one of these stations that had taken 3 weeks before to get to, and we got there in about 6 hours. So he gave him a transportation system. But then there were also 4 races and 57 tribes and 300 major languages and more than 1,000 dialects. And they said, comrade, how are we going to handle this? I mean, your little red book isn't going to go in all those languages. And Mao said, no problem. What I want you to do now is I want everybody in China to speak one language. I want everybody in China to speak Mandarin, period. And over a certain period of time, which wasn't very long, it was not more than a year, when you come in to get your permission to, you had that permission for anything that you wanted to do, if you couldn't do it in Mandarin, you didn't get it. If you didn't come in for your food stamps and ask for them in Mandarin, you didn't get food stamps, and you didn't get any food. So in a very short time, we had people speaking Mandarin. I can go all over China now and preach the gospel in Mandarin. The people understand it. But then they came up with this problem of the language. The Confucian scholars designed the whole concept of education to keep people ignorant so that they could be in control. So they said to Mao, how am I going to have a little red book? Well, it's going to take 47,222 characters to do it. And Mao said, simplify it or you know what. And they did. And today, you get the Bible in 1,556 simplified characters, which reads better than the old one. So then they said, well, wait a minute. It doesn't make any difference if you've got good roads and you have the book printed and everybody understands the language. You have about 94% illiteracy. And Mao says, okay, let's launch a campaign. Today, 87% of China's population is literate. They can read those Bibles as they want to.
They're doing better than we are.
Oh, yes, they really are. They really are. See, but what Mao did then, is, and then, of course, he up and died. And guess what? the little red book has been replaced by the Bible. So Mao gave China everything that the Romans and Greeks gave to the New Testament church 2,000 years ago. History repeated itself. He gave them a transportation system. He gave them a language, one language, gave them a simplified language, and he gave them literacy. But I think equally as important as that is he created an atmosphere in China that was ideal for conversion. And that was, you know, you're tired, you reach the end of the row, nothing works, and a lot of these things. And the people were, by the time Mao died, the people really wanted a change. And so here you have now all these people that went, they burned all the Korans and stuff, but a lot of Christians went and buried their Bibles. And one of the programs that we designed at FEBC because of this, talking to refugees, is we did every day dictation. We dictated the Bible at dictation speed so they could write it down. I still run into Bibles in China that are handwritten. And we do it for 30 minutes, and then a couple hours later we repeat it so that they could, you know, do it over again if they made any mistakes. And so consequently, you had a lot more Bibles than we thought. There's still a tremendous need for Bibles in China. But God used Mao Zedong in the same way that he used the emperors of Rome and Greece to get that New Testament church going. And he used persecution in the same way they did in the catacombs and places like that. So really, God knew what he was doing, and it wasn't a mistake. He was in control.
And, of course, then what man meant for evil, why
God meant
for good.
For good.
Yeah. And I think that's really the message, one of the strongest messages of this book, because the first part just tells about the incredible things that happened there during the Red Guard persecution,
right,
during the Great Leap Forward, and sets the pattern for the rest of the book.
Yes, right.
As this whole story unfolds.
Well, it's a story of, as I used to tell the people on Haven of Rest, God's in control, and he's right on schedule. All he wants to know is, would we like to go along?
And, of course, you mentioned that there are 15,000 to 20,000 conversions every day.
Oh, yes. Easily.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the figures like this, it's just sort of unbelievable. And yet the church is just growing and growing by leaps and bounds. I can remember just a few years ago when people were saying, yeah, we think there are as many as 50 million believers in China.
Right.
And yet now we're talking about, this rapidly approaching 100 million believers,
yes.
And this is going to keep growing. Now, what's happening in China today? Certainly, we know there's great industrialization. We know that there's tremendous growth in many of the major Chinese cities. Of course, American corporations are moving in and exploiting the labor classes there, or at least they're harnessing the labor classes. So much of the money that's going into China today apparently is coming from American finance and investment. I think about three-quarters of the industries that are going in there. And, of course, now there are jobs in the cities that have never been there before, and they're just cities just growing like mushrooms all along the coast.
Yes, well, the big event to watch now is going to be midnight on June 30th. That is when Prince Charles will lower the British flag over Government House for the last time. And the Premier of China will, about a mile down the road with 200 world leaders, will raise the Chinese flag for the first time in about 200 years over Hong Kong. And what we will see is the end of one empire and the beginning of another.
And what do you think the significance of that is going to be? In other words, certainly Hong Kong has prospered tremendously under British rule. Certainly I'm not a defender of much of what the British have done, but at least they brought stability, they brought education, they brought some element of civilization. But what is going to happen to the people of Hong Kong? What's going to happen to the believers of Hong Kong when they come under Chinese communist domination?
Well, I believe that, again, we have to go back to the idea that they're capitalists before they're Marxists. Now, I would have said two weeks ago, I'd have said I don't think there's going to be any problem at all. But now I'm beginning to have little second feelings. Last week, something happened in Geneva, I think, that is really significant. When the United Nations voted, to condemn human rights violations,
mm-hmm.
and they did not vote against China. And the Chinese ambassador, Wu Jianmin, derided the Western resolution, United States resolution, with these words. He said, they, the West, that is us, the United States, don't want to see the Chinese going their own way. The Chinese people have followed their own way for 5,000 years. Nothing can turn them away, certainly not a few anti-China resolutions. No force on earth can stop 1.2 billion Chinese people from advancing. Now, I would have said a year ago that that statement would have been impossible, because I think what they're going to do is just take over and join the family of nations. Because they are going to say, when that flag goes down, the Opium War is over, and guess who lost? And it's true. It is a matter of faith, because the barbarians are all off their shore for the first time, and that's very important to them. But then we go back to the capitalist ideal of money. But I think, and I know this sounds political, but I don't think it is. I think that the Chinese are going to really push for a lot of things that they ordinarily would not have, because they know the only other power in the world has absolutely no foreign policy.
And no courage and no integrity. Right.
Right. And I think that they are going to try to get all they can, because they know that the day is coming when our administration and our foreign policy is going to have to deal with North Korea and Haiti and Bosnia and the Middle East and Africa. And they know that they can get a lot of things while that's happening. And I think they also know that this is probably the most uncourageous administration that we've had in a very long time. And so they have an old saying, make a noise in the east and strike in the west. Or make a noise in the west and strike in the east. And so I think they will leave Hong Kong very much as it is. Because I think it would cause people to say, we told you so. But I think they will use other greater pressures from Beijing. As far as the church in Hong Kong is concerned, all the sissies have left anyway. All the great leaders of much of the evangelical movement have moved to the United States. But a lot of the Chinese have stayed, and I am sure that they will be much better because of it. And they're looking forward to it, not for any political reason, but they want to be a part of the church in China.
Well, you know, my wife was mentioning the other day that in the Bible it talks about, a great battle that will occur in the Palestinian area of Palestine, and there's to be an army of 200 million people.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And, of course, we're going to get an army of 200 million people. Well, there's
right.
only one country in the world that could mount an army of that size, and especially when you got a lot of men with no wives.
Oh, yes.
And,
yes.
of course, she was mentioning that apparently there's some talk about building all sorts of roads across China, all the way moving right over towards the Near East. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they already have a big road that goes right into Afghanistan.
Really?
Yes. In fact, there was talk. I lived over there during that invasion when the Russia invaded, and there was talk then that the only reason that Russia really invaded Afghanistan was to cut those roads off so that China could not connect up with Iraq and Iran.
I see. Well, now are those roads open into Iraq and Iran or not?
I don't
yet?
Know. They aren't totally completed yet through, but they're going through. They were going through Afghanistan.
Because we were building a lot of those roads for them.
Yes, right.
And we were spending hundreds of millions of dollars of American taxpayer money to build the very roads over which the Russians went to invade Afghanistan.
Yes, that's right.
Incredible. But then, of course, we built the roads that. Across the Sinai Desert, where I think one day we may very well see Egyptian tanks rumbling towards Israel.
Yeah,
incredible
right.
times that we live in.
Yes.
Well, our telephone number here, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and don't be surprised nobody calls. And I find out quite often when we have a fascinating guest such as yourself with a tremendous wealth of knowledge that people are so interested in listening that they just don't bother to go to the telephones to call because they don't want to interrupt what's going on. Could we get you on some time to tell about your experiences in Rwanda?
Yes.
And what is the name of that book?
That book is called Rwanda, A Walk Through Darkness into Light. It also can be purchased at any Christian bookstore. It's been out a year and a half now.
Okay. Because I think that is one of the great tragedies of our
time.
Oh,
yes, yes.
And, of course, I have the article from the New York Times where Bill Clinton is telling all of his associates, don't use the word genocide. In fact, that's the title of the New York Times article.
Yeah.
Don't use the word genocide, because if you use the word genocide in reference to what's going on in Rwanda, then we'd be obligated to go in and do something.
Well, see, today, the whole idea today is that we don't have walls anymore that separate people. We have a line in the sand, and the reason we like that is so easily movable with every little wind that blows. And genocide is out, but we call it ethnic cleansing, which is a much nicer term. And so all we've done is change some of the words, but we're stuck with the same thing.
Yeah, we really are. And, of course, the total disregard for human life and human suffering today is almost beyond the comprehension of the average American, because our reality is not human suffering. Our reality is what we see on television.
Oh, yeah.
And the idea that these things really go on and really take place is so difficult for most Americans to accept.
Yeah, right.
I know I spent many years working in the hospital, and I'll never forget when somebody comes in the emergency room, has been injured in an automobile accident, and 10 people converge on the stretcher,
yes.
And you go into the operating room, and I'd be working on the arm or leg or hand, and, there'd be somebody else working on the belly, and maybe a plastic surgeon there, and a chest surgeon waiting in the wings. And all the effort that went into saving one human life.
Yeah,
and
right.
I think we are so incapable of imagining what happened in Rwanda. And, of course, that was just a drop in the bucket compared with what's happened in China over this last 50 years.
Or what happened in China, in Russia in 72 years.
Right. And so I just think that somehow we have to make these things real. This is the real world. This is not the imaginary utopian world in which we live today.
Well, I think what we're seeing is, and this is what's making a lot of people nervous, is that we're seeing a shrinking of our comfort zone. I've been spending time down Chiapas, Mexico, and I'm going back down there in a couple of weeks to finish a book which I'm calling Chiapas, The Revolution in Our Front Yard. And I think we may see some of these things that others have seen, and I don't think it's too far away.
Well, maybe it's going to take that to wake the American people up. And to get them to, not have the sort of lukewarm, warm, fuzzy Christianity, but to be willing to stand and be willing to have something to die for. And
yes,
I think when I was first learning about Christianity, I read a book called Witness by Whitaker Chambers. And one of the things I shall never forget was, that if a man doesn't have something he's willing to die for, he really doesn't have anything willing to live for.
Yes,
and
right.
I think we have so many Americans and so many Christians today who really don't have anything they're willing to really stand for.
Right. Yes. And Dostoevsky said primarily the same thing.
And basically, would you mind just touching on what's going on down in Chiapas?
Well, what it is, I believe it is the end of, it's the last stand of the old tradition, not the new, but the old traditional monolithic Roman Catholic Church, but not the Catholic Church like in America, but it's a totally different church down there. It is also, I believe, the end of the last communist dictator. After what happened in Peru today, and they took care of that guy pretty quickly today.
Oh, no, I didn't hear what happened.
The army went in and killed all of them, and only one, they rescued all of the people who were held in that embassy. And only one person that had been captured was killed, but they killed all of the rebels.
Well, you can imagine what they do here in the United States. Why, they'd probably give them welfare and.
Well, that's it. Yes.
But that's the only way to deal with terrorists.
Well, we have there's a dictator down there in Chiapas called Comandante Marcos.
Right.
And he's sort of the, he had a love affair with the American press for a while, but not so great anymore. And I also think it is the end and the last stand for new liberation theology. And put all this together, and you have, again, a situation where there is a tremendous revival. There's a place where about 30 years ago there were about 6 or 7 believers, or they call them evangelicals down there, and now there are 50,000.
Really? Now that's in southern Mexico?
That's in Chiapas. That's down near the Guatemala border.
Right,
Now, but... But there's tremendous, has been, and still is tremendous persecution. And that's what I'm going down for, is to show what's happening down there and how it could well be exported.
Well, I think that it's exciting, and we certainly look forward to getting your next book. But I will be calling you. I'll get a copy of that Rwanda, A Walk in the Darkness, From Darkness into Light. And then I hope maybe we... when will you be back from your...
I will be back I'll be back the third week in May. And then I'm speaking at a camp in Montana all summer from June and July and August. So maybe if I had your telephone number, it might be best for me to call you.
All right. Well,
or your address would be better, and I could have the publisher send you a copy of the book.
All right, fine. Well, do you want me to give it to you now?
You can give it to me after we go off the air.
All right, fine. Well, then I'll ask Phil, who's on the board, if he will be kind enough to give you my address. And maybe Phil could come in now and we could give it to him. And then he can, I'll just put you on hold at the end of the program. Well, we're just about out of time. It's been a fascinating hour. Would you have any thoughts you'd like to leave with our listening audience, about what's going on in the world and what message the Christians who are listening to this program should take with them?
Yeah, I would stick with that God is in control and knows exactly what he's doing. What's happening in China was not as a contingency plan. There was not an angel running around up in heaven saying, God, Mao took over China or Hong Kong is reverting to the Chinese. We need a contingency plan. God knows exactly what's going on. And he's not caught up short. There are no contingency plans in God's plan for all of us. And he is also right on schedule. And I still say the question is today is, do we want to be a part of that? If we do, then we better be ready to pay the price. And whatever price he requires, we better be ready to pay. And that may involve some very, very severe persecution. I have a whole almost theology on, I believe that America is the most persecuted people in the world right now, because the most painful kind of persecution is cerebral.
Right.
You can beat my body all you want to, but leave my brain alone. And I think with the mass media and all of this today, there's this William Barclay, who was a Bible commentator in London, wrote 30 years ago, he said, there are many antichrists, but the greatest antichrist of all in the world today is the mass media.
Amen to that.
And he said that because he said in the end times, Satan always attacks you at your strongest point. And our strongest point in America is cerebral.
Right.
The world is dependent upon us to teach them God's word.
And we've sent out the missionaries for many, many years. But
yes.
I understand that the Chinese Christians are planning out sending out missionaries by the year 2005. They hope to have missionaries preaching the gospel all throughout the world.
Well, they have 1,500 right now in Afghanistan and some of those countries.
Well, it's exciting times, and thank you so much. I'm going to put you on hold here, and Phil will be picking up the call, but thank you so very much for being with
us. Righto.
Guest this evening, Mr. Carl Lawrence, his book, The Coming Influence of China. You'll find it one of the most fascinating books you've ever read. Good night, sir, and may God be with you.
Thank you.
Okay, fine, and let's see if we can transfer. There we are. Okay, and Phil, you can pick that up. And but anyway, I want to tell our listeners that this is a fascinating book. It's a fascinating subject. We're going to have to take a break now for the station identification, and when we come back, why, we can have open lines, we can play a tape. It's really more or less up to you. So give us a call at 464-8295 as soon as we get back, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY if there's something that you want to talk about. Otherwise, we'll hear a John Leffler tape, or, well, we just sort of play it by ear. But I always enjoy the open line part of our programming. And I really think the day is going to come when Americans are going to come under tremendous persecution. And I don't believe there's any place to run or any place to hide, because I believe that the battle is right here in the United States. It's a battle for the hearts and minds and souls of our people, and what happens here will determine what happens throughout the world.